And thank you all for coming. I know it's early. It's the first panel session of the day. Briefly, I'll introduce our panel, and then we'll have further introductions as we go on. But I'd like to invite them to join you in a more comfortable seating area. We're trying to disrupt the linearity of the room a little bit, and also they'll have a chance to look at the images as the presentations happen. So Timothy Berg from Pitzer, Assistant Professor of Ceramics. Dr. Monique Fouquet, Vice President Academic at Emily Carr University of Art and Design in Vancouver. And Rory MacDonald, who just finished his term as Head of Visual Arts at University of Regina in Regina, Saskatchewan. He's Assistant Professor of Ceramics. And Linda Sikora, at Head of Ceramics at Alfred University. Thank you for coming, and please make yourselves comfortable, and we'll get started. So my questions for this panel grew out of my awkward and groping, messy practice as a sculptor. When I began making things that became unruly, too unruly and ungainly and maybe heavy and tall to make on my own, I invited assistants or volunteers into the gallery space to help me install work. I'd always had uneasy feelings about blurring my roles as an artist and a teacher. And my interactions with the volunteers, and you can hear some of these uncomfortable documentations of how we speak to each other in the gallery, made me aware of this hierarchy. So I began to try to initiate works that opened up the work to other makers and unmakers in the space as we built and unbuilt works together. This is a piece, Roaming Tales, at the Mackenzie Art Gallery in 2007. And it's a bunch of people came in from the community, and I didn't expect who would come or why people would come, but it was a range of people from breath and body workers, clowns, and high schoolers from St. Luke's School. And people dealt with issues of community and aggression and tension and support. And it was really interesting for me to see what happened in the space. The students videotaped themselves, so there was a self-documentation thing that happened, and they came in and they worked in that space. I think in that kind of self-reflective space, there's that opportunity for people to take time to reflect as they're doing and as they're regarding what they were doing in the space, making and unmaking together, that is something that I wanted to bring into the classroom. So right at this point, I think my teaching and my making started to blur and intersect. That's Charlene. After Leroy, who was the first student, finished smashing apart the pieces, she just kind of instinctively reached for the shards and started building with bits of the shards onto wet clay. And that was Jasmine, who was video documenting. Mike Hahn is an industrial design student at the Rhode Island School of Design. He graduated last year, and he worked with me in a ceramics class that started opening up my questions around interdisciplinarity. So students would come in with goals that, like his, were to build a mini kiln that would melt down milk bottles to become a greening initiative, a planter initiative for the community of Providence. So he brought people in from all the different parts of the school, and he made this project.
It won't explode.
That is the mini kiln that he built. It's got heating elements
That's
in there.
Good.
It's melting the plastic milk bottle to recycle it and to reform it into a springtime planter. So he wanted to make the technology easy enough for people in the community to come and engage with it. And so it was blow molding and kiln coaches that he was bringing into connection with his industrial design training. And it was just a way that I started to question how people were asking new questions of their practice through immersion in this multiplicity of languages, from industrial design to ceramics to community engagement, and how they could use new strategies to make their work. So Leroy, who initiated that unbuilding part of the installation in Regina, raised a lot of questions for me around the tensions and aggressions in the making and the dialogic process of art.
What are we
yeah,
supposed
I'm ready.
To do? Can
right.
we bring like anything?
I'm gonna just use my foot.
Yeah, but it has to happen right here. You recording? Yeah.
Oh, you got it.
kind of harsh.
My hammer got taken away. How am I else going to fix the
ready? You took care of it, yeah.
It's nothing. No.
All right, next, who's up?
I
want to
raise that. Oh,
all together.
Give him the hammer, though, because I don't want his ankle to get sliced.
There were safety issues, and he kept pushing those boundaries. And
oh, my God.
Seeing the audience with getting injured. The collaborators were invited to intervene in any way they wanted to make and unmake things. And the things that Leroy said and pointed to at the discussion were something that was interesting to me.
Oh, I lost my ankle. I'm done.
I got a bow now.
That's all I wanted to do. Destroy something. As somebody's precious artwork, this bowl smashed with bits. I just wish I could see the look on their face.
Come talk to him. Actually, I'll send him this video. Is it recorded? Yeah. This is Greg Pace. What do you want to say to him? Who made
hey,
the
Greg Pace, I just broke your work. Something else I can break? See, that's why I don't make things so nobody can break it.
Anything
want to see my face come to Regina, buddy?
So that issue around why people make and what they're willing to risk when they come into a space and take material and hand form it and then open that up again for discussion, physical sometimes and destructive seeming, started to make me ask questions of what happens when we bring people from all different parts of the school, the college, and different ages and different interests in making into that whole mess of making. This is E.O. Palmer from the Washington State University Foundation's faculty. She worked with me and with 200 faculty and students last January to make a show at the university. And this was the time when I really started to ask, what happens when so many people's hands, different authors, different points of interference or creativity and risk happen when you're uncertain about what happens when you put all of these different aspects of a project together. So that was Krista Ames, a ceramic senior, and she was adding pieces, adding fragile coils and ceramic parts, and about four of us worked together to install this piece on the right. So what new questions open up, and what is lost and gained when a structure, institutional or physical, collapses under its own weight. The slowness that Mary was talking about comes out of just that process of pinching for me. So my question around slowness happens also in the area of questioning how the field has moved, the pace at which we move, not just physically but institutionally as well, and how does that inform how we plan the options that our students have as they move through the classroom and studio systems. The hands-on haptic experience that is so central to ceramics was something that has always been part of our discussion in ceramics. Here, Bruce Cochran and one of our students, Shelley, is they're assembling a pot together. So asking other people to come into your process is something that's very familiar to makers. And this issue of touch comes up later as I talk about my work with Harmony Hill students at a residential school in Rhode Island where touch is forbidden. The students who are dealing with issues of trauma are not able to touch each other, and we're not allowed to have physical contact with them. So ceramics in that space has a whole other charge around physical contact. This past August, I worked in New Orleans with artists and students and people in the community. Usually I ask people to bring in bits of ceramic kitsch or other things from home to make the work and somehow bring histories of objects and the life of objects from communities into the space and into the forms that we shape together. In this case, some of the artists brought me to their homes and they said, we have so much that was underwater during Katrina. You know, why don't you just take what you want? And I was uncomfortable with this, so I asked them to help me choose. What do you want to bring into the gallery space? So this is a chandelier that was underwater for several weeks. This is the house of Hollis Hanan, and she is a master's sculpture student in New Orleans. And this house went through the storm to such a level that this very high piece of architecture on the right was underwater, and there are cat scratch marks on that. So this mark of urgency and this mark of survival of a cat through the whole 3 weeks when that area was underwater was leaping up there to keep out of the flood is something that sense of urgency is something that I sense in the students right now and somehow infiltrates not just my interactions in the galleries and in making, but students and colleagues are grappling with how do we allow this practice, ceramics and beyond in the art school, to be relevant and to be part of the way that we maneuver survival in the 21st century. And the area was really still and continues to be really challenged by infrastructure issues. This is the week I was there, this was in the paper, there was an oil spill in New Orleans, and 3 weeks after the oil spill, there was still oil on the top of the water. So the way that we organized those things was weighing heavily on the people I was installing with. So this is Hollis's truck, and we loaded up really interesting things from underneath her house. She collects really amazing things. And I was interested in this thing about being under the house or under the boardwalk. My collaborators took me to the bayou where there were alligators, you know, right under the boardwalk. And this kind of interest in what happens where beneath where we walk is something that is still a big question in my practice for me. What's happening underneath all of that floor? My first year at RISD, because I didn't know what I was doing, I suggested working together with an architecture professor, Hansi Better. She had invited me to be a critic in her December crit, and she was interested in how I was questioning the design process of the architects. I said, obviously, you design this in a dry space, you know, a very dry space. We work in a wet space. There's this other thing about having this wet, malleable material in a sometimes nonverbal space that allows certain solutions to come out that I don't know if that's being uncovered in this class. So we decided to have a course in the spring called Wet Space, Digital Space. And we had the students come together, architecture and ceramic students at the graduate and undergraduate level. And we did a day-long charrette for a project that we were going to do at Harmony Hill School in Japatuchet, Rhode Island. This is where teenage boys who are not able to function in regular school systems attend. And we met once in digital space during this, you know, initial period. And so we used rapid prototyping and 3D modeling to come to solutions for how to get an architectural screen into the counseling center. And then this hand-drawn process and using lots of tape and a lot of student energy, we came up with different goals for the kinds of interventions we wanted to make in the site. And then we met in wet space, and people modeled things and used things by hand. So the students were invited to bring their skills and their training and the fluency in their language to the project. And the solution for the project was to make these architectural screens that would fill six architectural voids in the counseling center, a place where the boys would then redirect flow through that space. So points of egress and entry were interesting to the students in terms of how to disrupt that, how to direct the flow. This was an opportunity to get off campus, and I'm really interested in connecting students in the classroom to that, to the larger world. So in collaboration and in engaging community, they're made vulnerable because they're not in the bubble of RISD, and I think that that's been really important and really exciting for me in my teaching practice. From 40 boys at Harmony Hill School, 12 volunteered to join us. So there are two of our grads, Junghee and Nathan, and they were demoing hands-on approaches in risk-taking. So one student would take a form, quite beautiful form that it's made out of raw clay, and hand it off to the other person, and the other person would intervene with it, sometimes drop it on the floor, slice it in half, and the gasps that came from the audience were, you know, I would never let people wreck my stuff, you know. So this really interesting space of tension and aggression was something that I felt was important for students to journal about. So all of my students took journals on their process of interacting with students at Harmony Hill. And there are some of the screens and our students moving through the spaces together. Also, the journal gave people an opportunity to critique the way that they approached working collaboratively. So here, Wynn Bauer, one of the ceramic seniors, was saying, you know, it was very difficult to work together. You know, our group had no leader, there's no guide. So this idea of how do we disrupt the hierarchies is also problematic for students, and it's not as organized. It is messy and frustrating for all parties involved. But I think something happens in that space that's very fruitful. For the last half of the semester, we did outdoor installations. So again, coming together and designing possibilities with partners. Here are two of our seniors and their partners from Harmony Hill. This is Wynn Bauer's project. He took porcelain tiles, and he found this dwelling place in New England. There's obviously lots of walls, stone walls, and this was a hollow where he found bits of china and evidence of human habitation from two centuries ago, and started tiling the floor and bisecting the space with his partners. So this idea of disrupting the natural environment was something that we were interested in, because what is natural and what is unnatural? There was so much about deviance that came up in the discussion with counselors. And that's a word we don't use very much, that whole idea of deviance. So working through those issues was something that was really interesting to the boys and to our students.